I'd better go back to the Buddha himself. Back to the Buddha's own teaching, because that is really where it all begins. The Buddha, as I'm sure you all know, gained enlightenment, became Buddha under the Bodhi tree at Buddhagaya 2,500 years ago. And after initial hesitation, he decided to communicate his great vision, to communicate the content of his enlightenment experience to the rest of humanity. So he started teaching. He started wandering. He wandered from place to place. He met people. He talked with them. He communicated with them. And he tried to impart to them that great vision, his vision of human enlightenment, his vision of the potentiality of each and every individual human being. He tried to get them to plant their feet too on the path that led to enlightenment. So in this way he spent 45 years. He didn't write any book like Socrates. He just talked with the people that he met. The books were written later. His teachings, after several hundred years of oral transmission, were written down and became what were eventually regarded as the Buddhist scriptures, the Buddhist canonical texts. I'm not going to try to give you a resume of the Buddha's teaching at this point. That would be too much. And in any case, I imagine the majority of you are in any case familiar with the general outlines of his teaching. But after the Buddha's death, what after Buddhists call the parinirvana of the Buddha, his teaching spread more and more widely in India itself, spread from the north down to the south, and a number of different spiritual and doctrinal and organizational developments took place. If we look carefully at the whole period of the development of Buddhism in India, we can see that it can be roughly divided into three great periods. Better to say, three great periods succeeding, say, the first 100-year period covered by the life of the Buddha himself and his immediate disciples. We can call that period the period of archaic Buddhism. As I said, it lasted about 100 years. After that, we have a period of about 1,500 years, which falls quite naturally into three great periods, each of about 500 years. And in the course of each of those 500-year periods, we find that one particular form, one particular development of Buddhism was dominant. The first 500-year period was the period of what is generally called Hinayana Buddhism, the Buddhism of the little way, or the little path, or the little vehicle. This represents a sort of systematization, a sort of, what shall I say, a sort of consolidation of the Buddha's teaching along certain lines. For instance, the spiritual ideal of that period, the spiritual ideal of the Hinayana, was what is known as the Arahant. The Hinayana had the Arahant ideal. The Arahant was one who had gained Nirvana, one who had gained enlightenment, but he had gained it, so to speak, for himself alone. He wasn't so concerned with other people. He wasn't so concerned with what was happening to other people. He wasn't so much concerned with helping other people. And that did represent, to some extent, a sort of narrowing down of the original ideal of the Buddha himself. On the more philosophical side, Hinayana Buddhism was responsible for the development of what is called the Abhidharma. Dharma is the general word for the Buddha's teaching. It also means truth or reality, but generally, more generally, just teaching or doctrine. Abhi means higher or superior or further. So the Abhidharma was a sort of systematization of the Buddha's teaching. And it tended sometimes to be of a rather, as it were, analytical nature. For instance, the Buddha was very much concerned with the extirpation of what we would generally call egotism or selfishness. And to this end, he had taught his doctrine of what is called the five skandhas. That is to say, he had analyzed the individual being into rupa, or form. I'm giving very approximate translations. Vedana, feeling. Sanya, or perception. Sankhara, or acts of volition. And vijnana, or acts of consciousness. Now, the Abhidharma developed this. It developed this very, very much further. And it analyzed all these different elements into their constituent elements until it had a sort of short list of ultimate elements. I expect you recognize the sort of pattern. Different schools had different lists, but some of them had very long lists indeed. Some of them had lists which included several hundred, or if you subdivide it even further, several thousand items. And these different items, these ultimate elements into which the whole of existence, mental as well as physical, had been analyzed, tended to be regarded as ultimate. And these also were known by the name of dharmas. This is rather confusing, because in Buddhism you've got this word dharma used in all sorts of different ways. Dharma means the teaching. Dharma means something like cause or condition. Dharma also means one of these ultimate elements, as well as meaning idea in a very general sense, in the sense of mental object. So the Abhidharma tended to reduce the whole phenomena of existence, all the phenomena of existence, to a finite number of discrete ultimate entities. And this development reached its apogee in a school called the Sarvastivada. I won't go into their refinements upon this teaching. We shall see the significance of it in a minute when we come on to the Mahayana and the Madhyamika. But anyway, this was the sort of development which took place within the Hinayana during that first 500-year period with regard to the Abhidharma. And then on the more practical side, because I'm covering quite a lot of ground quite rapidly, so I'm generalizing rather wildly in a way that I wouldn't perhaps care to do in front of a gathering of Buddhist scholars, because scholars are always apt to question one's little generalizations. One can only get away with that sort of thing in front of a non-specialist audience. But there was, in the case of the Hinayana, rather an emphasis on the practical side, on the monastic life and on asceticism. I won't say anything more than that.